With this installment, we reluctantly have to conclude the fascinating tale of the Mordechai HaTzadik and how he became a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, his mission to find his two friends. And we are up to that section where Mordechai is relating stories of the Baal Shem Tov to the townsfolk of Dubrovna. And we are in the middle of the final and concluding chapter of this letter of the Rebbe, to previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, to the Rebbetzin of blessed memory, in which he tells the tale of how the Baal Shem Tov came to a city where there were two Hasidic brothers, and one of them was the Masnagid, and that the question was posed by the non-Hasidic brother, was answered by the Hasidic brother. The Baal Shem Tov remonstrated the Hasidic brother for giving a wrong answer, and spent a long time explaining both the depth of the question as well as the answer. The brother who had heard the answer from the Baal Shem Tov first refused to reveal the answer, and they decided to go to the Masnagdic uncle, a whole group of Talmid Chacham, of scholars. And we concluded last week where the old uncle declared, after hearing the answer, which took quite a number of hours to review, to be told, that the old uncle said that he had never heard such goyness, such Torah genius, and that he was eager to visit the great goyin who had thought of that answer. And old as he was ready to travel for miles on foot if necessary, just to meet such a profound Torah scholar. "That's nothing but talk," said the Hasidic nephew. "When it comes to action, I'm sure our uncle will manage to find some ingenious scholarly argument to prove that his vow was made in the heat of excitement and was not meant seriously." "No," declared the old man. "If you tell me who this Goyin is and where he lives, I will surely go to visit him. It's worth every sacrifice to hear such genius." The Masnagid brother and his friends were even more excited. They pleaded with the brother who had taught them the subject the way one would beg for something he needs to save his life. They truly wished to know the Goyin's identity so that they could go to visit him and receive his teachings. The brother who had taught the subject was convinced that they were all serious about their desire to know his identity, the Goyin who had taught the correct answer. After a brief pause, he said, "The Goyin who taught me the correct approach to this topic and gave me the answer to the question is none other than our own spiritual mentor, the Rebbe, the Baal Shem Tov." He then related how he had approached the Rebbe to request a program of Avodas Hashem, of spiritual worship of the Creator, and that the Rebbe had charged him with teaching a false interpretation of the Torah. "The answer you gave to your brother is no answer at all," the Baal Shem Tov had said. Then he had proceeded to demonstrate the proper way of posing the question, and had supplied the answer that the Chosid had now repeated. The old uncle, the Masnagid's brother, and the Masnagdish brother, and his genius friends, upon hearing that this truly astute and penetratingly ingenious analysis had come from the Baal Shem Tov, were left dumbfounded and in shock. "I will not go to bed tonight," said the old uncle. "I will remain awake until after Chatzis. After davening, I will immediately go to beg the Baal Shem Tov's pardon as required by law for having slighted him. I will accept any penance he imposes upon me, and I will become his disciple." The two Hasidic brothers were delighted with this, but the third brother, the Masnagid, was altogether confounded, and continued to disparage the Baal Shem Tov. His old uncle and his friends were furious with him, but to no avail. The old man ordered that the guests be served a proper supper, during which they reviewed the whole topic once more, and engaged in complex discussions that put everyone in a good mood. Now that the Masnagid brother had discovered that the answer had come from the Baal Shem Tov, he was completely lost, and kept right on speaking against him. When he heard his old uncle's decision to visit the Baal Shem Tov, beg his pardon, and accept a penance, and that his friends would also be traveling to the Baal Shem Tov, he was unable to bear it. Ignoring the fact that night was already falling, He departed all alone and returned to the city. The old uncle and his nephew's genius friends became Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, while the third brother remained a misnagid. It was no use talking to him, for the mere mention of the Baal Shem Tov's name would drive him mad. When the Baal Shem Tov came to town, he would not cease speaking against him. After his uncle and his former friends actually became Hasidim of the Baal Shem Tov, this third brother bore them all a grudge, and he began to daven, he began to pray and study in a different synagogue and house of study. The three brothers all lived in the same courtyard, each in his own house, but the hatred the Misnagdish brother bore his brothers was so great that he fenced off the area around his own house to avoid any possibility of meeting them in the common courtyard. During the days of Slichas, the Baal Shem Tov suddenly arrived in town. This created quite a stir and much happy anticipation. After the old uncle and the young geniuses became the Baal Shem Tov's chassidim, nearly everyone in town and in the rural villages near the old uncle's country home had also become disciples and chassidim of the Baal Shem Tov. Therefore, the Baal Shem Tov's sudden arrival was truly big news, and messengers were sent to all the surrounding rural settlements to inform all that the Baal Shem Tov would be spending several days in the vicinity. At that very time, the third brother was sick in bed. But sick as he was, as soon as he heard of the joy that the Baal Shem Tov's arrival had caused in town, he began to prattle his old complaints against the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov delivered several teachings, one of which concerned the verse, "You shall not hate your fellow man in your heart." And the Baal Shem Tov explained, if one hates his fellow Jew, even only in his heart, even if it is not expressed by any hateful act or speech, but is limited to hateful thoughts, he commits a sin. What steps can one take to prevent someone from committing the sin of hating his fellow Jew in his heart? The answer is, you must admonish your fellow Jew. If you know of a person who hates you, you must confront that person. The hatred must have a cause, and the cause is most likely a spiritual one. Perhaps that person observed your behavior and conduct and concluded that the Torah forbids such practices. The only solution is you must admonish, approach him, and demonstrate to him that your conduct and your practices are proper. Thus, you will prevent him from sinning. If you ask, why should I bother doing this? The answer is that the mitzvah of Avos Yisrael, the mitzvah of love of fellow Jew, obligates you to do so. This is the meaning of do not commit a sin while so doing. This means to say that your love of fellow Jew, your Avos Yisrael, must prevent you from allowing your fellow to commit a sin on your account. When you demonstrate to him that your customs are proper ones, and that your behavior is in accordance with the Torah, you will remove from him the sin of hating his fellow Jew in his heart. Since you are certain that you are right and the person who hates you is wrong, and you are saving him from the sin of hating his fellow Jew by fulfilling the great mitzvah of Avos Yisrael by loving your fellow Jew, you might think of using harsh language, God forbid, while speaking to him. To prevent this, on the words, do not commit a sin while so doing, Rashi comments, do not put him to shame in public. Before leaving town, the Baal Shem Tov informed the two brothers that he wished to visit the third brother. They replied that under ordinary circumstances, as soon as the brother would catch sight of the Baal Shem Tov entering his home, he surely would run away. Now, however, he was sick and in bed and would be unable to escape. The Baal Shem Tov went to visit the sick Misnagid, accompanied by the two brothers and a few other people. When they entered the house, they found the family weeping and wailing. The patient lay there with his eyes closed and with a high fever. His lips moved as though he were whispering something, but they could not make out the words. He made convulsive movements, indicating that his illness was very severe. When the Baal Shem Tov entered the sick room, he was offered a chair. He sat next to the patient, placed his right hand on the patient's head, began to quote and explain a Gemara in the customary melody. After citing a passage and a part of the Torah of the Baal Shem Tov, which the Baal Shem Tov then related the story as written by the previous Rebbe in a letter, as mentioned earlier, to his daughter, the Rebbetzin ends abruptly in the middle of the telling. And so a number of issues remain unresolved, as what exactly happened with Rav Mordechai, how long did he stay in Dubrovna, and whether Rav Mordechai eventually hooked up with his third friend, Rabbi Yisachar Ber. Although we don't know whether Rav Mordechai actually met Rabbi Yisachar Ber in his travels, we do know from another letter of the previous Rebbe, or from his memoirs about Rabbi Yisachar Ber's visit to the Baal Shem Tov and what became of him afterward. And as a continuation of this story, we'll relate now about Rabbi Yisachar Ber, or Rabbi Yisachar Ber Kabelniker, as he was known, the Lubavitcher Magid, how he came to the Baal Shem Tov. Rabbi Yosef, the Magid Lubavitch, spent the festival of Shavuos, the previous Rebbe writes in his memoirs, with the Baal Shem Tov. He had departed Lubavitch in his usual manner, disclosing neither where he was going nor the purpose of his trip. The Baal Shem Tov sent for Rabbi Yosef and instructed him that on his way from Lubavitch, he should pass through Smargon and visit the local yeshiva, which was quite renowned in those days. There, he would find a yeshiva student named Yisachar Ber, who came from Kabelnik, a village near Minsk. He was to take this Yisachar Ber as a husband for his only daughter. Of course, Rabbi Yosef obeyed the Baal Shem Tov's instructions. When he arrived in Smargon, he approached the Rosh Yeshiva to arrange an introduction with this Yisachar Dev of Kabelnik, and he proposed to him the match with his daughter. Rabbi Yisachar Dev agreed to become the Lubavitcher Magid's son-in-law. It was also agreed that he would remain at the yeshiva for yet another year to continue his studies. During that year, Rabbi Yisachar Ber became a close friend of a brilliant young man who came from Minsk named Rabbi Menachem Mendel. This Rabbi Menachem Mendel had once been the substitute Rosh Yeshiva during the absence of Rabbi Zerach Eliyahu Knittinger, who was one of the famous Goyim of that time. This same Menachem Mendel later became one of the pillars of the Hasidic movement. At the beginning of Elul, in the year 1751, Rabbi Yisachar Ber arrived in Lubavitch and became the son-in-law of Rabbi Yosef the Magid. Rabbi Yisachar Ber remained in Lubavitch and was supported by his father-in-law while he continued his Torah studies. Sometime during the year 1755, or 4 years later, 3 years after the Magid, Rabbi Yosef had taken Rabbi Yisachar Ber as his son-in-law, he finally disclosed to him the fact that he and Rabbi Zvulun the scribe, mentioned earlier in the Rebbe's memoirs, were disciples of the Baal Shem Tov. He also told him that whenever they disappeared from Lubavitch, they traveled to Mezhebish to visit the new leader of the Jewish people. The father-in-law, Rabbi Yosef, began to acquaint Rabbi Yisachar Ber with the new teachings of Hasidus, and these teachings quickly captured his young heart. A whole new world was revealed to him. Things he had not understood previously now became clear. During Elul of that year, Rabbi Yisachar Ber and Rabbi Zvulun went to visit the Baal Shem Tov. The Magid Rabbi Yosef had to remain in Lubavitch because of the approaching high holidays. The Yom Neroim were rapidly approaching. Rabbi Yisachar Ber spent 3 months with the Baal Shem Tov. He was present during the High Holy Days and the other festivals, and he saw the Baal Shem Tov both at times of the greatest awe and at times of the greatest joy. He carefully observed his conduct, listened to his davening, and absorbed his teachings. Thus, the younger Rabbi Socha Ber became a fervent chassid, but he still had much to learn. He returned home and began to study chassidus in even greater depth. Rabbi Yosef the Maggid, the Zvulun the scribe, and the younger Rabbi Socha Ber now constituted a society in Lubavitch. All three were disciples of the Baal Shem Tov, and they were fiery chassidim. The threesome could now meet together in Lubavitch to study chassidus and to share their insights on various lofty topics. No one in Lubavitch, or anyone else for that matter, was permitted to learn their secret, that they were chassidim, followers of the Baal Shem Tov of Mezhebish. Although the Baal Shem Tov's name was gradually becoming known throughout the Jewish world, it was still dangerous at that time and in that location to be his follower openly. It was not yet time for the Baal Shem Tov's disciples to broadcast their Rebbe's new teachings to the world at large. Certainly, in White Russia, Lithuania, and the surrounding countries where Lubavitch was located, in White Russia, the time was not yet ripe for this. These countries still had to await the coming of the fiery souls, such as the Alter Rebbe, the founder of Chabad Hasidus, to introduce the Baal Shem Tov's teaching in these regions, and to entrench them firmly for future generations. Meanwhile, our three disciples of the Baal Shem Tov and Lubavitch sat and studied chassidus, while putting the teachings into practice and reinforcing them through good deeds. Thus, they prepared that territory for the future introduction of chassidus. Their new style of doing good deeds, their love of simple working folk, their whole new approach of implanting Jewish values in the hearts of the masses, all of the above served to pave the way for the future chassidic leaders. Indeed, we shall see, says the Rebbe, that it was in Lubavitch itself that the foundations of chassidus in that region were laid. It is no wonder that Lubavitch became the headquarters of Chabad and the very center of chassidus in White Russia and Lithuania. Not only were the foundations of chassidus laid by these chassidim in Lubavitch, it was in Lubavitch that the Alter Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman, studied Torah as a young man, and his early teacher was none other than Rabbi Socha Ber. Even before the founder of Chabad knew anything about chassidus, perhaps before he even heard the Baal Shem Tov's name, for he was only a lad of 12 years old at that time, he had already heard the basic tenets of chassidus being as it was expounded by the Maggid Rabbi Yosef in his sermons. Thus, Rabbi Shneur Zalman studied not only under his teacher Rabbi Socha Ber, but also under his teacher's father-in-law, the Maggid Rabbi Yosef. Probably, he also studied under the scribe Rabbi Zvulun, for all three were always studying together. The spirit of chassidus could be felt in all of their speech, in all their actions, and in their interpersonal relations. It could especially be felt in their love for simple folk. This love for ordinary folk was and has remained the very cornerstone of the Baal Shem Tov's teachings. The Alter Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman, used to refer to the Baal Shem Tov as grandfather. This was because he had been a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov's disciple, first of Rabbi Socha Ber, son-in-law of the Lubavitch Maggid, later of the Rebbe Rabber of Mezritch, the Mezritch Maggid, from whom he learned the teachings of chassidus as they had been received from the Baal Shem Tov. After Rabbi Yosef passed away, Rabbi Socha Ber, who was visiting the Baal Shem Tov quite frequently, became his father-in-law's successor as Maggid in Lubavitch. Since Rav Shneur Zalman was a disciple of these two disciples of the Baal Shem Tov, especially of the Mezritch Maggid, he felt that he was truly a grandchild of the Baal Shem Tov. He used to say that Rav Baruch of Mezhebish was the Baal Shem Tov's grandson of the flesh, while he, Rav Shneur Zalman, was the Baal Shem Tov's grandson in spirit. Later, when Rav Shneur Zalman became attracted to Rav Baer Mezrich and became his disciple, he truly became a double grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, a disciple of Rabbi Socher Doiv, and a disciple of the Mezrich Magid, who was the Baal Shem Tov's real successor. Because of this twofold connection to the Baal Shem Tov, the Alter Rebbe also became connected with Lubavitch, where he had studied under Rabbi Socher Baer in his youth. This laid the foundations for the later development of Chabad, Hasidus, and Lubavitch. However, the Alter Rebbe himself lived first in Lozhne and later in Ladi, and it was the Mittler Rebbe who finally settled in Lubavitch. As you may recall, much of the story seems to have been handed down to the previous Rebbe from Rav Shmuel Baer Barisover. The previous Rebbe writes about this Rav Shmuel Baer, that Rav Shmuel Baer once said that once during his stay in Chashnik, a great desire arose among the young scholars to make a pilgrimage to Lubavitch. But that Morche Mashpia, named after the Rav Mordechai HaTzadik of Art story, dissuaded us, saying that because the Mittler Rebbe had been denounced to the government and had in fact recently been in prison, it was not a good time to travel to Lubavitch. A few weeks later, however, the rumor spread that the Mittler Rebbe was traveling to the holy resting place of his father, the Alter Rebbe, in Hatich, and he would be passing through the towns of Zhlobin and Gomel. Consequently, 10 of us young folk decided to travel secretly to one of these villages. One night during the month of Av, we departed Chachnik in stealth, arriving in Zhlobin a week later. There, we found several hundred guests from throughout the vicinity, all of whom had come to see the Mittler Rebbe. To our disappointment, we learned that the Rebbe was spending the night at an inn near Zhlobin and would remain in town for only one day. Moreover, being exhausted from the journey, he would not lecture on Chassidus, nor would he receive visitors for Yechidus for private audiences. I had the good fortune to find favor with Rav Meir Tzvi, the butler. He allowed me to assist him in bringing water and in other simple tasks. That evening, I had the privilege of hearing the Rebbe davening Meiriv in his room. Later, when the butler of Meir Tzvi brought him a glass of coffee to the Rebbe, I caught a glimpse of his holy face. I waited up the whole night, hoping for another chance to see the Rebbe's face. At about 3 o'clock, the butler opened the windows of the Rebbe's room. At that very moment, the Rebbe emerged, and passing through the room where I stood, he fixed a penetrating glance upon me. Paradoxically, I was petrified and at the same time captivated by this. I knew that the Rebbe would have to pass through that room on his way back, but I lacked the courage to remain in my place. In great panic, I hid myself behind the door. After the davening, Rav Meir Tzvi informed me that the Rebbe inquired who I was. He had replied that I was from Chashnik, a disciple of Rav Mordechai the doctor. He thought it possible that the Rebbe might request that I be brought to his room. Hearing this, I grew very frightened, not knowing what to do. I was completely unable to think coherently, for my mind had gone blank. But God blessed me, he gave me a good sense to say some tillim. And once I began my tillim, rivers of tears began to flow from my eyes. Later, when Rav Meir Tzvi informed me that the Rebbe had actually sent for me, I became very flustered. It was only with Rav Meir Tzvi's assistance that I managed to enter the Rebbe's holy chamber. Being completely overcome emotionally, all I could manage to say were the few words, "Rebbe, I want to be a chassid," after which I began to weep. The Holy Rebbe replied, "Chabad demands intellectual activity, understanding, and concentration. If you work hard, you will become a chassid. May God bless be he grant you long life." The Meir Tzvi cautioned me not to reveal to anyone that I had had the great privilege of going in to see the Holy Rebbe. During the day that the Mittler Rebbe remained in Zhlobin, about 2,000 Chassidim arrived from the surrounding villages. Since it was Thursday, the Chassidim made a great effort to persuade the Rebbe to remain Ein Shlomen for Shabbos, but to no avail. At 2 in the afternoon, the Rebbe departed Shlomen after issuing an edict that no person, except for those who were actually traveling in his official entourage, should dare attempt to follow him on the road. After the Rebbe left, Reb Shmuel Ber continues, I went to seek my companions from Chashnik, who were mingled among the great throng of people. With much effort, I managed to find them, and with great regret at not having heard the Rebbe lecture on Chassidus, we returned to Chashnik. On Monday, after I arrived home in Chashnik, during a moment when no one else was present in the Beis HaMedrash, the Mordechai Mashpia said that he detected an aura of spiritual purity about me. He commanded me to tell him what had happened to me, and I told him everything. Reb Shmuel Ber married a Chashnik woman, as mentioned at the very beginning of the letter, his cousin, the daughter of his maternal uncle. During the 5 years following his wedding, he was supported by his father-in-law while he continued studying under the tutelage of Reb Mordechai Mashpia. In 1832, when the Rebbe Tzemach Tzedek visited Minsk, Reb Mordechai Mashpia traveled there to see him, together with many of the young scholars. On that occasion, he took Reb Shmuel Ber along with him, and that was the first time he saw the Holy Tzemach Tzedek. In Tov Kuf Tzadik Dalet, approximately 1834, Reb Shmuel Ber made his first pilgrimage to Lubavitch. For personal reasons, he was unable to remain longer than 2 weeks. Various circumstances prevented him from making another trip to Lubavitch until Elul 2 years later, but this time he remained in Lubavitch for about a half a year. He was then about 30 years old, and he had already achieved fame among the Hasidim. The Rebbe's holy sons gave him honor, and even the Rebbe the Tzemach Tzedek himself bestowed great honor upon him. As Chassid Reb Chanoch Hendel tells it, by the year 5603 or 1843, when Reb Shmuel Ber was only about 35 years old, Reb Shmuel Ber was considered one of the foremost Hasidim. When the Rebbe returned home to Lubavitch from his trip to Petersburg during that year, Reb Shmuel Ber occupied a place in the first rank of the elder Hasidim who went forth to welcome him. And this concludes the long letter and the supplement to that letter of how Reb Mordechai HaTzadik became a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, and how he sought out Reb Chaim, and what happened also with Rabbi Socher Ber Kabelnicker.